and okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Frinelli alongside Braden Fogerson. We started last week's episode with three people, ended last week's episode with six folks in the booth after the rest of us got back from St. Louis. And now we start today's episode with just Braden Fogerson and I, just the two of us. Just the two of us.
Oh,
how you doing today, Braden?
I'm good. And now that after last week, I've been able to do that script myself and know what it's like, I get to kind of understand the nerves that come with it. And if Kaylee were here, she would be able to confirm that I had quite the bit of nerves before last week's
episode. You guys killed it.
And
I heard good things about that show. Julian Voss and Kaylee Sugimoto, special thanks to them for filling in for David and I last week. David a bit under the weather today. Hopefully he feels better soon. Best wishes to David. But it's Braden and I today, and I am lucky because I basically get to have an interview for this segment with Braden Fogerson, who, yes, in addition to being my co-host, is also going to be covering Redbird women's basketball this weekend for WZND as they go to Moline as the number one seed in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. The first time under Coach Kristen Gillespie. Last night, they just racked up the awards, including Coach of the Year for Kristen Gillespie. And Braden, can we touch base with just how high the energy is for this Redbird women's team going into tomorrow's first tournament game?
The energy is through the roof. The expectations are also through the roof. We know now that they're going to be facing Murray State, which, after just a complete blowout against SIU, very disappointing. I kind of wanted to really see SIU give it their all against them. They're going to have all the momentum that they need to make it a good game as well. So I certainly expect this first round to be much more exciting than a lot of first round games against one seeds would be. Murray State's a really good team, and they finished the year off strong, so they're going to be a tough opponent for sure. But for the Redbirds, like you said, the awards for Kristen Gillespie, you had Paige Robinson getting not only newcomer of the year, but also just player of the year for the MVC. Very well deserved. But Mary Crompton as well, her name was in the mix because she was unbelievable. Just a prolific three shooter, one of the greatest to ever do it at CEFQ Arena. And this is a team that is going to have to be remembered as one of the best women's teams that ISU has been able to put together. And it's going to be very important for them to end it on a high note by getting themselves back to the NCAA tournament, which would be for the second in a row.
Yeah, so the last time they played Murray State, February 5th, ISU won 79-73, in which in that game, four Redbirds who I believe Braden already mentioned all four names of, Deanna Wilson, Mary Crompton, Kate Bowman, and Paige Robinson, all put up double figures, 10 for Crompton, 16 each for Deanna Wilson and Kate Bowman, and of course the conference player of the year, Paige Robinson, a casual 24 points in that victory. So, yeah, they're going to need that effort again throughout the tournament, obviously. Murray State, not a team to sneeze at in the first round by no means, and then if you win on Friday, you play again Saturday afternoon, which will be on WZND, with probably Drake or Murray State. I would assume it'll be Drake that goes to that round. And then chances are you'll get to play in the championship against Belmont. And those are two teams that if the bracket falls the way it should, which who knows if it will, tough opponents. They lost to Drake this season, one of the few losses they had, and Belmont going into the tournament on a 13-game win streak. So there are other teams in the second and third seeds that are very hot, and ISU definitely has a target on their back, Braden.
Well, I think when you look ahead, all of these matchups are very it's easy to say, oh, well, this matchup happened earlier, so maybe ISU's got a good shot against them. Or, oh, if they face Drake, this is maybe a problem because they lost to Drake. Or, oh, they face Belmont and they won, but sure, but now they're on a 13-game winning streak. You've got to be able to win the game you're in now before you can worry about your next game anyway. You're there at the tournament. You're right on site where all these other teams are playing. And once you get through this game against Murray State, you can then watch and see what Drake looks like if they end up facing the Bulldogs. And, you know, further than that, if they can beat Drake, then they can focus on Belmont and see what's going on. It's going to be pretty darn easy to be able to get film. That shouldn't be your worry, is scouting your next opponent. Your worry should be focusing on your current opponent, because all you can really do to do yourself a favor in a matchup like that is to take your opponent seriously. You can't be looking past anyone. You can't be saying, oh, we're the top seed in the conference. We're going to roll right through Murray State. Like I said, they have momentum. They have confidence now. And we know, as people that have been able to watch Missouri Valley rivalries for now 3 years of our lives, at least, you know, as far as when we've been on campus, these rivalries are a pretty big deal. They're pretty, they can get pretty nasty at times even. And so all these teams really want to be able to beat each other, and they know what's at stake. They know how big of a deal it would be to be able to win each and every game they're going into. You just need to be able to avoid looking past your opponent.
So the plan is for this weekend for women's basketball here on WZND. I should describe the plan, because we thunk it up this week in the studio. We had brainstorming sessions. We spent sleepless nights trying to plan it out. Now, we have three games coming at you this weekend, potentially. One for sure tomorrow at noon. That'll be Braden Fogerson and Tim Zalabak on the call. Potentially 1:30 on Saturday with a win tomorrow. That's, again, Tim and Braden. And then Sunday, the Valley Championship, if they make it to that. That'll be at 1 o'clock, I believe. That's the tip for that one. Mm-hmm. And then, depending on what happens this weekend, they may be in the NIT. They might be in March Madness. And we will be posting all over Twitter and stuff like that the plan. Chances are we will carry either of those games. Chances are you'll get to hear from Fogerson and Tim again, and we will see. But it's bound to be an exciting next week or so for the Redbird women's team, Braden.
Yeah, for sure. And for this Murray State game, Tim Zalabek going to be on play-by-play. I'm going to be on color. Then we'll switch off and do it the reverse for, if needed, a second game. And then we'll see how that final game goes, what we decide. But we know that's the plan for now.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, you know, all things going well, if ISU can keep winning, then they, you know, if they win the tournament, they get an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. And I believe it would be hopefully the plan for Tim and I to be on the call for that too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For the NIT, if it ends up being NIT, that's still going to be a pretty big deal, and still important for the Redbirds to win if that ends up being the case. It'd be some midweek action as well, so it'd be very exciting to be able to follow either way. But obviously the hope is to be able to win this tournament and go on to that next round, go on to the NCAA tournament. They've done it before, so.
You know, this is off topic, but I kind of want to bring this up. I was talking to some of my friends last night, and we were discussing, because one of my friends wasn't really familiar with the NIT, so I was kind of explaining, and he was like, but when do they transfer into the March Madness? Because he kind of thought it was like a loser's bracket, like a consolation bracket, where somebody got to come back in, like double elimination. And I said, no, it's not the case. It's just the best teams that didn't make March Madness. And he thought of something, as someone who's not as much of a fan, saying, like, what if the team that won the NIT got to go slide in and play in, like, the Elite Eight of March Madness? And I said, I bet they'd lose, but it would give teams something to play for. What do you think about that theory?
I think they wouldn't be able to get in the Elite Eight, but I think the first four, either for women's or men's basketball, you could definitely be able to slide one of those teams that wins in the NIT back into the tournament that way. I think that'd make it interesting, and I think it'd make it much more worthwhile to enter the NIT and give it your all. I think it'd make it probably much better basketball as well to be able to have that much more to play for. But as someone that grew up watching the Fighting Illini, I was very much familiar with the NIT for quite a few years, so it's also a way to be able to improve your team and get yourself to a point where you are more competitive and know how to face those teams that you have to deal with and get yourself back up in the upper echelons that you need to get in the real big deal tournament.
Well, it's still postseason basketball, right? And we're talking about this as if, you know, we already know that ISU women are going to be in the NIT. We have no reason to believe they won't be in March Madness for the second straight year. We're just talking about hypotheticals.
But I'm just afraid of jinxing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're talking about hypotheticals, but the NIT is still postseason basketball.
Oh, and yeah.
I think what you said, Brayden, about a midweek game, because it would be Wednesday or Thursday, that could be really cool, too, because it would be at home.
Yeah,
so there are positives, but that would if we're in the situation where that is, you know, the game that ISU is playing, that means that they get upset this weekend in Moline, which is not what we want. And I think this ISU team can take it one game at a time, as Coach Gillespie said on Sunday. I think she phrased it as win one game, three games in a row, meaning take it one game at a time, which I know that's a very common coach saying, but I think that's the right mentality to have. And I think that's what they said when they went on that 12-game win streak middle of the season.
It's the same as that speech from Major League where he's trying to hype up his team and he's saying, you put two games together and then three games together, yeah. You call that a winning streak. It's just like that. You just got to be able to hype your people up and make sure that they're doing their due diligence and getting themselves ready for each individual game. And every little thing counts.
This Redbird women's team has had a great season by every means. If you haven't been listening every week with us, we talk about them pretty much every week, but we'll go right over one more time because this is, you know, quite possibly the last time we'll talk about them on the show because we won't have a show next week as we'll be on spring break. They are 23-7 overall on the season, 17-3 in conference, the best season by far for Kristen Gillespie since she took over in 2017 for this program, and she truly turned around this program. They were bottom of the conference every single year before she came in, and now they are well on their way to quite possibly their second straight March Madness tournament, although this is the first time they've gone in as the one seed. Much different story last year as they came in as the four seed and just kind of tore through the tournament. So what do you think's a better thing, coming in as a lower seed and you know, shocking the world, or having that target on your back and the confidence?
In terms of an end result, in terms of an end story, I guess it's kind of a little bit more fun to be able to have that kind of a lower seed mentality and kind of work your way through. But there's no one that's going to be able to say this team didn't earn it if they come as the one seed and, you know, dominate for the majority of a season the way that ISU did. And, you know, say they lose to Belmont. Belmont was equally impressive this year. No one's saying that they would be, you know, a huge underdog or anything, or Drake or any of that. It's really a very competitive conference in terms of, you know, probably the top half of the conference. I think anyone would be able to say that, you know, if they put a few games together, they can win it.
Yeah.
So it's been very impressive, not quite as top heavy as the men's half of MVC basketball. So there's really a lot of talent in the entire conference and the entire tournament. And so either way, whatever your story is, no matter how you get there, it is a big, big deal to be able to win that tournament. And everyone wants to be able to get that done.
We've talked a lot about the if they lose, you know, if they this, if they that, but there is a huge possibility that they win and they go to March Madness for the second straight year. And even as, let's say they win the tournament, even as the regular season champs and the tournament champs in the Valley, they still probably wouldn't get any higher than like a 13 seed, I would think.
Well, here's a question that I want to be able to ask you too. If they lose the tournament, say to Belmont in the final round, do you think they have a shot of still maybe making it? Is there an argument?
Yeah, there's always a shot, but I think if their conference record was like undefeated or something, maybe they would have a better shot, but they still lost their games in conference, which is going to hurt a little bit, but I think there's still a chance. I mean, you get the automatic bid to the NIT because you won the regular season, but you have to win the tournament to make March Madness automatically. Yeah, I'd say there's a shot. I don't think they're going to toss out an extra bid to the Missouri Valley when they can just give like the Big Ten or another Power Five an extra bid, which is valid, I guess, but I don't
know. Big Ten's pretty strong, for example.
Yeah,
there are a lot of different teams, and of course, when you're a mid-major school, you kind of get looked past every once in a while as well. That's frustrating. But this team, if you put them, I don't care if they don't even score a point in the first round. If you put them in the tournament, they have enough shooters. They have enough talent. You look at the stats. Mm-hmm. You look at the lineup that they have, the depth that this team is able to put together. They can definitely make some noise in a tournament. And I think that if they do end up as a 13 seed, they have an opportunity to still make noise. That's certainly an opportunity to be able to come up as an upset. You've just got to be able to have your shooters having an on night. You can't have anyone struggling. You can't have anyone that's off. Mm-hmm. But if everyone's feeling good, and it doesn't happen every time, but if you do get in that situation, and it has happened quite a bit this year, where everyone is feeling it at the same time, especially early on, you've got a lot of people that have that microwave trait, you know, from 2K. That if they can get off to a really good start, they can definitely make some noise even in the March Madness bracket.
They may as well play in Iowa City again. I'm not sure, because that might be the host city, but I would hope if they do, they don't play the University of Iowa, because that would mean they'd be coming in as a 16 seed. And I don't think they're going to get that disrespect, because I think the University of Iowa women's team is well on their way to a one seed this year, as they are even better than last year when they beat Illinois State in their opening round matchup. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear from the National Player of the Week in collegiate baseball, Daniel Pacella. Ben Hootie and I had a chance to sit down with him this week. Let's hear what Daniel had to say after the break.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
In the history of Redbird baseball, there's only been two men who have won the National Player of the Week honor. And now it's happened 2 years in a row in those two chances. Ryan Cermak, former Redbird, now Tampa Bay Ray. And now Daniel Pacella, who in only week three of his true freshman year with Illinois State has been named the best player in collegiate baseball for the last week. That is a great honor. Before he's even won Conference Player of the Week, he's already National Player of the Week. So we're going to hear from Daniel now, as Benjamin Hootie and I had the chance to sit down with him earlier this week. It's about 13 minutes here with Daniel Pacella.
First and foremost, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your journey here to ISU and why you picked the Redbirds?
So I had a few schools reach out pretty early, like sophomore, junior year. And I remember once I had decommitted from the University of Kentucky, Illinois State was one of the first schools that reached out. And it was always a school I was really interested in. But I know that Illinois State doesn't recruit as early as some of the big time schools do. So as soon as I was told that Illinois State was interested, I immediately came and went on a visit here, and it just felt like home right away. So that was one of my main reasons of committing as soon as I did.
What was the reason for that decommitment from Kentucky?
I wanted an opportunity to play a little bit more and impact the team earlier on. And I also love just being a part of like a family rather than kind of like a business culture. So coming to the Redbirds was more of like I guess that family atmosphere that I really wanted in a school.
Yeah, so we kind of were looking into you before. We know you went to Mundelein High School. Can you kind of describe your path to prior to ISU, whether with travel ball or at Mundelein?
So Mundelein, I had gotten an opportunity freshman year to start on varsity in the playoffs, and that went really well. It was a great learning experience for me. And then once I had done that, I realized that I was good enough to play on a bigger stage. So I had transitioned to Top Tier Baseball, which is a travel organization around Chicago area.
Yeah.
And they taught me everything I know about just like being a consistent hitter at a high level. So I had played with Top Tier. I was playing up for Top Tier North my sophomore year. And then I had moved up to Top Tier Americans my junior and senior year, where that was like the big time. We went on a bunch of trips across the country, and that's where I kind of learned like it's a next step, right? So that was where I realized like my abilities can play, and this is where I wanted to kind of be at.
So we're both from the Chicagoland area, and as are a lot of our listeners. So you know, that runs deep, the Chicago connection there. But was there any places that you played in growing up or with Top Tier that, you know, were pretty cool that our listeners might know as like, you know, oh man, he played there at that stadium? I mean, doesn't have to be Wrigley Field, but anything in the Chicago area that, you know, you were really proud of?
I was actually, I was hoping for the opportunity to play at UIC Stadium because I knew that they had that cool backdrop, but I never really got the opportunity to travel much around the Chicagoland area. Most of it was like towards East Coast around like South Carolina, North Carolina. But no, I didn't get an opportunity to play at like any big time facilities around like the Chicagoland area.
You'll get the chance for UIC here at ISU now, though.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. It took till college for that one to happen, but it worked out with their transfer to the Valley.
Yep.
So what about this last week of games? You obviously really started to hit the ball really, really well. What's been going right for you?
I think it's just been confidence, man. This game is it's so much more mental than you even think. So I had to realize like I have the ability to play at this level and I got to know that. So everyone around me is going to kind of like making sure that I can keep my head high. And when failure happens, just move on to the next at bat the next day. And I think that's what the coaching staff really stressed on me these past few weeks. So then once this week turned around and we went to number six or eight, Arkansas, I kind of realized like, dude, like, even though I might not have the confidence, I got to fake it. I got to fake it till I make it. And that's pretty much what happened.
So obviously everything you've done is extremely impressive so far. And like just us as journalists, like sometimes we'll get feedback from like family and old friends and stuff like that. That's just awesome. What has that been like for you so far? Like has your family been reaching out, your old teammates, all that?
Oh yeah. The support's crazy. All my family's been reaching out. It's just an awesome experience. It's actually surreal that this has all happened so fast. So I'm just trying to keep my head just level and keep rolling with it. But yeah, family, friends, I mean, my support system's awesome.
So we had a guy from our staff travel to Arkansas to watch the game out there. And he had told me a story about something with bats. Like, did you bust a bat, like a metal bat, and they had to bring some extras? Can you get into that a little bit?
Yeah, so we were at Arkansas State, I believe, and it was our second game in the series. And it was probably around my last at bat. Some of the guys, I got a single to right field, and they had said that it sounded like it broke. And I didn't think anything of it because I'm using a metal bat. I was like, there's no way. So I went up the next at bat, and I think an 0-2 count. I hit a foul ball, and it shattered the entire barrel. So we came back and put like a little Band-Aid on it before I went back out for my next swing. But no, I couldn't believe that happened. I didn't even know metal bats could break like that.
So that had never happened to you before?
It had never happened to me before. I remember back in my like USSSA baseball days where they had those like two-piece composites, I broke a few of those, but never a metal bat like that, no.
Are you more of a metal bat guy or a wood bat guy? If you had to
pick? I would say definitely a one-piece alloy guy. I think it's just more of a balanced swing. I like a little bit of end low, but I like feeling the entire bat in my hands, where sometimes that two-piece can be like, people almost say it bends a little bit when you swing. Yeah. So I'm more of just a one-piece, like traditional guy.
So everything you've done, amazing. How have you been able to kind of keep your approach or change your approach over from high school over to the college level?
Yeah, so I think a big thing is now that we're seeing better arms, better competition, it is the most important to be on time. So the coaching staff has just stressed that importance of get your foot down, see the ball as well as you can, and put the best swing on it you can. So I think from high school, I was more of a I took the bigger swing, and it didn't necessarily work out every time. But transitioning to college, it's more just putting the ball in play. So using the pitcher's velocity to help me out, not doing as much with the lower half, kind of keeping my foot on the ground and just being as simple as possible. I think our coach, Wally Kranzer, told me, just touch it. And that's all I've been doing is just doing the best I can, just putting the ball in play. And when it happens, you know?
So as a freshman on this team, obviously you're learning from a lot of veterans. Is there any specific players on this team that you have done a really good job of welcoming you in, or you know, being a leader on this team?
Yeah, I would say the entire team did a really good job with that. But I know specifically like a name that I recognize really well is Luke Chang. He's that guy that you can never tell he was a good ball player unless you saw it in person, right? Like he's super level headed, huge team guy. So as soon as I met him, I actually had met him early on when I came here for my official visit. He came to a dinner with me and my parents, and he wasn't even asked to do that. So that's a guy that like I respect a lot, and I think that's what this team's all about, is just being there for each other and just supporting each other through it all.
So let's get a little more into this award that you won. You and Ryan Cermak, that's the only Redbirds to ever win it in a week. That's insane. What does that mean to you to win the award and be in the same name or same vein as Ryan Cermak?
Man, it's surreal. I really haven't even digested it all yet. I'm just trying to be like I said, as level-headed as possible. I love like being recognized for stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to help my team win as much as possible. There's not many things I can say about it. Like, I can't even put my feelings into words. It's just something so surreal to me, and I can't even explain it.
So we asked Ryan actually last year when we did an interview in a similar situation about who he models his swing after in the MLB. Is there a player that you try and model your swing after, or are you all your own product?
I would say I am a guy that I look at my swing pretty much just by myself and with the coaches. I don't really try to model it off of anyone because everyone's got their own like tweaks and mechanics they like. But I think approach-wise and hitting-wise, I love Juan Soto. I love his discipline in the box, how he has that Soto shuffle, that rhythm, and it just kind of makes it, it's like that alpha presence that I love in that box, is just feeling like you are the best, and that's what I try to resemble whenever I'm up at the plate, is just being confident and having that like Juan Soto, I guess, swagger up at the plate.
Absolutely.
So you bring up confidence right there. Obviously, it's baseball, so everyone goes through rough stretches. How will you manage to keep that confidence at some point later in the season if you end up going through like a little bit of a rough patch?
You know, I think it's the biggest thing is forgetting your last plate appearance. So even when things don't go well, I mean, I've certainly had games this year where I had two punch outs and it wasn't going great for me, but it's that next at bat that matters most. And once you start forgetting about that previous failure, it's going to really help you succeed. So I think if I was to go on another, let's say like rough patch where I might not be hitting or seeing the ball as good as I can be, I think it's just going to be forgetting every, like, let's say I strike out, I'm moving on to the next at bat as well as I can. And just realizing that I'm going to have the opportunity to help my team win with one swing of the bat. And that's all I can do.
Has there been anything that surprised you or been kind of fun about road tripping so far in the season? I mean, a week and a half in Arkansas, a couple weeks before that. You know, now that you're new to the whole road trip, I know you said you played a lot of travel ball in high school, but is collegiate road tripping like that any different?
Oh, for sure, man. Being with the team and traveling on the bus is awesome. I mean, it obviously the 8 hours is not easy. When we drove back, I think we got back at like 2:30 in the morning. But it's just like the team bonding, man. All the guys being together at all, like pretty much all times, that's what really makes our team chemistry how good it is. And I think that's a big reason why we win a lot of ball games, because we're together all the time. We have this mold, and I think that's what makes that the team trip so fun.
Yeah, you look at the team at 5-6 right now. What are some things that you've seen from across your squad that you really like, and what are some things that you think that can be improved upon to make your guys' team even better?
For sure. I think our team battles. When we're down, I mean, I think we were down 4 runs against, I can't remember, bottom of the 7th. We came back, took W, and that was huge. So I think it's just the persistence we have, knowing that we always have a guy that can step up. So 1 through 9, there are guys that can put the ball in play and score big-time runs for us. So that's something I've noticed is, our offense can really do some damage. And we also have a really great defense behind our pitchers. So the pitchers are able to throw strikes, know that they have a good defense behind them, especially our infielders. Like they're legit, man. And then if I was to say anything, it's just throwing more strikes and then being a little bit crisper on the defensive side. And when it just comes to like throwing to the right cutoff man and stuff like that. So it's a learning experience being transitioned from first base to outfield, but it's those little things that I think the team could work on and just make our craft even better.
Why should Redbird fans come out to Duffy Best Field this season, see you guys play? What's the big selling point?
Oh man, I would say it's just, I mean, I'm going to try to be as humble as possible, but it's just a blast to watch, man. Like the energy is amazing. All of us, we appreciate your support so much. It would make the atmosphere 100 times better.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out of the day to do this for us.
Of course. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was Daniel Pacella of the Redbird baseball team. Special thanks to Ben Hootie for joining me for that interview. He has a story of that interview and a little bit more details on Daniel Pacella on WZND.com. You can check that out. That was published on Tuesday when we did that interview. And Braden, you actually knew Daniel Pacella long before Ben and I did as a intern this past summer with the Normal Corn Belters.
Yeah, in the KCL, he was a mid-season addition, but he immediately started getting work. His first week, his debut, he slashed 375, 421, 563. He had three doubles, had two ribbies, and scored three times as well. I mean, that was just a really, really good start. And then himself and Davey Fitzpatrick kind of swapped at first base in the depth chart. He was an integral part of the ground slaws that ended up winning the championship pretty handily that season. I, of course, was a Blue Caps fan, which was miserable because they were the worst team. But the ground slaws kind of dominated that whole year, and everyone kind of knew that the ground slaws were the best team. And to be able to add someone like him, you kind of knew that he was just an extra piece that was going to be, you know, a part of a team that was already really, really good. But now that he's a part of a team where, you know, filling a hole is a much bigger deal, like this Redbird team, where, you know, you've got a lot of changes and a lot of moves that you can make to improve the team, being able to insert him in the lineup is a much bigger deal, and it's much more noticeable.
When we come back, we're going to have Liam Lyons come on. We just talked about the league, the Colonels Collegiate League, but now we're going to talk about the association and the NBA and the Chicago Bulls. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WCMT.
Here come the Bulls. 20-point victory over the Denver Nuggets last night, and into the studio to talk about it with us is our today's version of our Brother Rice correspondent, Liam Lyons, because we don't have David Moses, and Leo Staher is long graduated. So, Liam Lyons, first time on the show. Welcome in.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, the Bulls are something, man. I mean, after last night, they really made a statement, especially against one of the best teams in the NBA.
So you are a self-proclaimed big Bulls guy. You listen to a lot of Bulls talk. And what are your thoughts at this point in the season? I know we just talked about during the break, you were ready to come on and kind of, you know, lament the Bulls a little bit. But now, you know, you're 20 piece in the best team in the West. So what are your thoughts right now?
Well, obviously right now, after last night, I'm very confident in what we got left. I mean, we only got like 16 something games left. The Bulls have been up and down basically throughout the whole year. And we went into the All-Star break looking like what we were not supposed to be. I mean, DeMar DeRozan became an All-Star, as he should have been, but he's really not the same player that he was last year. Then you go into the buyout market, you get a guy like Pat Beverly who can go out there and actually be a point guard. As much respect I have to Ayo Dosunmu, Pat Beverly is a more experienced point guard, and he's really helped this team as much as he could. And definitely after last night, you just really made a great impact on the floor.
I think the Pacers loss was tough to watch. I did watch that game. I didn't watch much of the Nuggets one last night, but I watched the Pacers loss, and Pat Bev had that last-minute foul, and then Tyrese Halliburton really went off at the end, had a buzzer beater. But I think they're losing some games that they shouldn't be losing in competitive games. Zach LaVine in that Pacers loss specifically had like 42 points, I'm pretty sure. So it's not that the individuals are not playing well anymore. It's just that it's kind of back to that level they were the year before last, where they just couldn't win no matter which way it fell. And I think maybe this is a point where they can maybe sneak into the playing spot.
Yeah, I definitely think they could. One of the problems that I have with the Bulls, too, is like Billy Donovan's a great coach. He always will be a great coach to me. But his problem with me is small ball. We're playing teams like the Toronto Raptors, the Kevin Durant Suns, who have guys that are like way towering over us. And we're starting four guards in Nikola Vucevic. As much as Vuce can do with defensively.
Who plays like a guard, too.
Plays like a guard. Like, yeah. He shoots the three more than he plays in the post. And
exactly.
I mean, he can shoot it, but we need him in the post. Yes. Yeah. And like, we have like guys who just can't play defense all the time. Like, we got like Andre Drummond, who is nowhere near he used to be. Alex Caruso is getting hurt more than he actually plays defense now. And it's just really hard to watch, especially when you're trying to make a playoff push.
Yeah. Zach LaVine, 29 points last night. Nikola Vucevic, 25. Pat Williams, 18. And DeMar DeRozan, 17. That's all the double figures players. Other than that, Ayo, 8. Kobe White, 7. So it was a solid effort all around, but that's what happens when you score almost 120 points.
And, Liam, I want to be able to ask you, the Bulls, they're in 11th, but they're right on the cusp. It's going to go down to the wire for both conferences, but for the East, definitely just a few games from being, you know, actually just within one game of being still in the playoff picture. You know, what sort of things can be improved upon and worked on for this team to be able to, down the stretch, ensure that they can keep themselves in the playoffs?
Well, definitely, I think for sure we need to keep doing what we're doing with Zach LaVine. I mean, ever since Pat Beverly has joined the team, you could see that he's kind of like staying away from the defensive side and passing. He's going right to where he should be. He's a scorer. That's what he came here to do. That's why we gave him the Supermax, gave him the deal to be a Bull for a long time, pending no trades. I need to think that we need to get more stuff on, like, defense. Like, hopefully Javonte Green gets healthy in the next few weeks. Hopefully we get DeMar DeRozan, like, back to what he should be and not, like, chucking up as many threes as he can, because he really is a mid-range player. Yet he tries to be the main guy all the time, because I think he's getting a little bit jealous with Zach LaVine getting, like, more than 30 a night. But I think to make this playoff push, you really got to have guys who are able to stay in the game all the time, play the best defense they can, because we're one of the top-ranked defenses of the league. Going into the game against the Nuggets, we're the 7th-ranked defense in the NBA.
Another thing I'd like to be able to ask, DeMar DeRozan leads the team in assists with just 5.1. Is that kind of a concerning stat to you, or do you think that the Bulls are able to make that work that way, just kind of, you know, spreading the ball kind of evenly more than just having one guy leading the offense in assists?
Well, I think if you compare this year to last year, definitely DeMar was our focal point. Like, he led the offense in almost every aspect. This year, we're kind of spacing it out, and actually, ever since we got Pat Beverly, we're actually doing what we should be as a team. People are cutting. Like, last night, you had Pat Williams go off. He's a guy you don't really see go off as much. He's actually passing the ball more than he should, cutting to the lane, getting more baskets. So you don't really need assists as much as you would think, looking at the stats. But I feel like if we're having DeMar be what he was in kind of like San Antonio as a passer and more of like a second option, that will definitely help us, and especially when you have guys like LaVine and even Vooch who can score.
Do you think it would have been more valuable for the Bulls, and this is, you know, hindsight's 2020, but do you think it would have been more valuable for the Bulls to have traded DeMar DeRozan in exchange for maybe some younger role players to let Zach LaVine have the ball more often at the deadline?
I feel like it definitely could have gone either way, because I feel like DeMar's like a great player. He obviously is a great player. He always will be a great player to me, but I feel like if we traded him, we definitely would have lost the leadership role, because yes, Pat Bev would have came in, but like we all know, Pat Bev is coming into a team after the buyout market, after the deadline, where we only have so many games left. As much as he can be a leader, we had no leader. Like Zach LaVine was selfish. Vooch is not speaking up, even though he should be. So DeMar was like our mentor. And if we lose him, you kind of lose a lot of like teamwork, as I would say. So I feel like it would have helped us, but at the same time, we could have lost a lot of games if we had no mentor other than Pat Beverly.
So looking at the standings, the Bulls 30-36, 11th in the East. As I said, the Nuggets the best in the West. The Bulls currently holding into a play-in spot. I believe they're at 11th, right? Isn't it the top 12 teams who all get into that?
It's top 10.
Oh, it's the top 10? Okay.
But so they're like right on the verge, because you look at Washington, they're 31-35. So Bulls play Houston on Saturday.
Yeah.
Washington, I think, is on the road as well. But Houston's obviously one of the worst teams in the NBA. Yeah. They're really young. So I feel like the Bulls can take advantage of that and get some momentum. And then you have teams like Toronto who have some injuries right now. Atlanta might not be as good as they are supposed to be, so yeah, we could definitely sneak into like that 10, 9, maybe even 8 spot if we go on this win streak that we're supposed to have.
I should know better as a baseball fan about playoffs changing so often, but I just always forget what the current look is at playoffs for the NBA, because they kind of changed it during that bubble season, and then they kind of adopted that play-in, which I do like that. It's similar to the wild card in the MLB. I think it's interesting. Forges is making a face.
Well, I mean, I've already had my rant once before on the NBA playoffs having way too many people, way too many teams in it.
Yeah.
But I do think that looking at the standings right now, this is probably about the perfect year to have it, because everyone's kind of pretty much equal. It's not like, other than, you know, Bucks, Celtics, 76ers, Cavs, maybe you could throw in there. Aside from that, in terms of record, you get people really, really close together. And to be able to say, oh, well, this is the line where you're in and you're out, I think that it would be interesting this time around to see Wizards, Bulls, Raptors have themselves a shot at the playoffs, because you know, it's a lot more even than you typically have in the East.
It's weird. They're not really playing much more great Eastern Conference teams. I mean, they have the Bucks one more time, but they got like the Mavericks and the Lakers and the Clippers. And not that the Lakers are good, but they're just the Kings. I mean, I guess they have the Heat. So they have a tough last bit of the schedule, but they're just going to go out west and just have to play against all these teams that they wouldn't even see unless they somehow miraculously make the finals. So that's interesting that at the end of their season, it's going to come down to if they can climb the Eastern Conference standings by if they can beat the powerhouses in the West. And they did last night, so who knows if that can also keep happening.
Yeah, I mean, it will definitely be interesting to see what can happen over these next set of games, because like you said, I mean, really, I'm looking at the schedule right now, and the month of March, we really only have the Sixers in back-to-back games, and that'll be tough, one at home, one on the road. But then you got teams like Minnesota. Portland's really – I mean, Damian Lillard has been a killer all year with his, like, three-point range extending even more and more. And then you got teams like Sacramento, like, light the beam. Like,
yeah.
You got plenty of teams that are just really standing out to me right now. And if the Bulls can get on the, like, pace that they've been over these last few games, because they've been in a lot of close games, apart from that Phoenix game over the last weekend, they could definitely make a playoff push. I feel like, especially if, like, DeMar and Vooch come together.
It's just going to be frustrating for the Bulls, because if this exact Bulls team played this exact way 5 years ago when you had the Warriors super team and the West was the conference that was super, super dominant, and then the East had really, really weak teams, this Bulls team would probably be a 6 or 7 seed right now, I would say. But because of the fact that the East has gotten much more competitive, and now the West is the conference that kind of just is very top-heavy, it's just kind of frustrating that this is the time that the Bulls have kind of put together a really interesting-looking team, because it's that much harder to be able to find success when you have so much talent in the East.
Yeah, I think undisputedly the Nuggets are currently the best team in the West. You know, they have 8 more wins than second place in Sacramento, even though the Kings are fun, but...
Very fun.
Yeah, out East, though, I mean, it's tough. Who do you guys think the best team in the East is? I'm still going to go with Boston, but I think Milwaukee, sitting at 47 wins, is nothing to laugh at, that's for sure. Who do you guys think is the best team in the East right now?
Well, according to the Boston fan that I met in Panda Express a week ago, I should bet all my money on the Celtics, so...
You heard it here first. Did you get his or her name?
What was that?
Did you get their names?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was in line and he was just telling me, oh yeah, you just bet all your money on all the Boston teams. You bet all on the Sox, you bet on the Celtics. And I don't really think there's very many times in the past 25 years that hasn't been pretty good advice, and at least in terms of, you know, saying that these teams are good. But yeah, the Celtics are really good, and I don't know. I feel like the Bucks are up there too.
So you heard nameless Celtics fan on the Panda Express line to talk to Fogerson, put all your money on Boston. Liam, are you riding with that?
I actually am going to go against that and go with the Milwaukee Bucks, because I feel like over these
last... Did somebody tell you at like McDonald's or something?
No.
It was me.
I don't have an interesting story as Brady, but the reason I'm going to go with the Bucks is because, I mean, from the beginning of the season to now, they've just added like more and more like depth, as I would say, like, because they added Crowder at the deadline. They picked up Joe Ingles in the offseason. They got Goran Dragic as part of they took him for the Bulls, basically, because the Bulls were like, all right, see you later. So now they have Goran Dragic, and they had just more veteran leadership on this team, even though they don't really need it. But, like, they're just so skilled. They start three centers a game. They start Portis, Lopez, and Giannis, even though Giannis isn't a center, but he's 7 foot. So they're going out there with 3 7-footers a night and winning these games by a lot. So I'm just saying, I would love to see a Bucks-Suns finals again. I would love to see it. I don't know if Kevin Durant's going to be healthy for it, but that's my prediction.
It'd be pretty cool. So I'm going to end the segment on this one, but I think you mentioned the Goran Dragic. They released him, and I think the best tweet I saw that day was somebody said something about Goran Dragic and Patrick Kane, because Patrick Kane got released in the same day. And so somebody said, just completely out of context at the end of the night, farewell to a Chicago legend. And Patrick Kane. That's going to be the end of this segment. When we come back, we're going to get a little bit into some more basketball, but this time men's basketball in the upcoming March Madness tournament. This is March. We sleep in May. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome back into The Red Zone. We're going to talk a little bit about men's basketball in the March Madness tournament. Of course, Loyola has left the Missouri Valley Conference. They have already lost in the Atlantic 10. They will not be in the tournament this year. I think, couldn't have a new better team. But no, you guys know my hate for Loyola. But anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the rest of the March Madness bracket and the team representing the MVC. Drake is my sleeper pick. Those Bulldogs are going to be really solid in that tournament. They might even win a game or two. We'll have to see. It's tough for a Valley team to go any further than that. But no, they played really well in that conference tournament last weekend. They beat Bradley pretty handedly as the 2 seed in the tournament. They beat the number 1 seed Bradley. They have one of the oldest lineups in D1 basketball, as most of their starters are above 24 years old. And I think this could be a decent year for them. So if we're going to take a homer pick, I think the Missouri Valley's team, Drake, could be a sleeper pick. But who else are you guys looking out for as you two are following the conference tournaments going into March Madness? And maybe I'm joking a little bit about Drake, but who actually could be a sleeper pick as people put their brackets together this next week?
Well, teams that I was looking at, especially I was looking at the Big Ten tournament today. I mean, I saw wins like Ohio State, and like right now Penn State's keeping it close with U of I, but I'm not saying they're going to make the tournament, but you have plenty of teams in these conference tournaments today that are like just showing out. Like for example, like DePaul, like is keeping the Magic alive right now against Xavier in the Big East tournament. Like Marquette won earlier today. I'm thinking that somebody from the Big East could make a big name for themselves because I mean my buddy goes to Providence. I thought they were gonna make a big run, but they got beat pretty bad today. But I mean, hey, I would love to see someone from the Big East make a run because I mean you've seen teams like Xavier before, but what if like DePaul went on this run and made a big name for themselves?
No, I agree because I was looking at the Big East heading into the tournament. I was like, this is honestly, except for maybe the ACC, the most exciting and most competitive conference tournament in terms of, you know, the matchups. And I was very, very excited to be able to see that all turn out. Someone that I'm going to go out on a limb and say is not a sleeper pick is Villanova. I think they are very much overvalued. They won their first round matchup, but I don't really like Villanova all that much. And considering, you know, general consensus knowledge on Villanova as of late is that they're really good and they have performed very well as of recent. I feel like that runs about over. A team that I do really like, though, this year, I was impressed by Kennesaw State. Kennesaw State, I didn't know if I was very, very impressed with them, and they're going to be a low seed, so it's not very likely that they're able to win. But I think that looking at how that tournament went, how they were able to – a lot of people were picking against them to be upset by Liberty, for example, and the fact that they were able to win that tournament – to be able to make it all the way, and now they're going to be in the bracket. I don't know if I would call them a winner in any game because they're going to be a very, very low seed, I would assume. But I think that they can certainly make any game competitive because they have a lot of different skills and a lot of depth in their lineup as well.
This is by no means a sleeper pick, but I am going to make my second homer pick of the night, and I want to talk about Kentucky going into this tournament. If they can do well enough in the SEC tournament, and they are also 12-6, so they'll more than likely get an at-large bid being in the SEC. And the SEC sixth man of the year, Antonio Reeves, former Redbird, loved seeing him go off the other day, 37 points in their victory. And that is exactly why he left Illinois State after the coaching change, because he wanted to get better NBA looks and play for a team that could make the tournament in the SEC. And I am really proud of him as a player, having met him a handful of times last year through ISU and the year before, and happy for him. And I think that's going to be one of my teams I'll be rooting for this year, literally just because I want to see him succeed.
I also want to be able to add this. Oral Roberts made a big run last year, and they are yet again conference champions, and there really wasn't much doubt that this team had a lot of talent coming out of last year, but I think that, you know, with the same really, really talented coaching that they've been able to put together and the pretty smooth run through their conference tournament that they've been able to put together, I think they've got, a potential sleeper yet again here this year.
Steve Cease loves the ace on tourney talk. He just texted me, our faculty advisor. He's getting involved. Braden isn't in all of his little brackets before the tournament. So
it's been miserable. I'm not gonna lie. I kind of understand now what my strategy will be for next year, but I didn't know what my strategy was going to be yet. I didn't want to sit here and chalk it up the whole time. And I was like, oh well, I want to pick some of these upsets because that's what happens in these tournaments. But I kind of like overdid it a little bit with some of them. Like for example, like I had For the Big Ten, which I should be familiar with because as I've mentioned a little bit today, loved Illinois all my life. I've always watched the Big Ten. I had the championship for that tournament as Iowa versus Maryland, and that was just very much like wishful thinking about upsets. Iowa's already out. I still think Maryland can put themselves a pretty good run together, but Ohio State already kind of ruining my dreams of – getting Iowa, which it's not a biased pick because I hate Iowa, but I expected Iowa to be able to put something together finally after years of lackluster performances, and it is just a one-and-done finish for Iowa.
You got to be careful what you say. You can't say you hate Iowa because you may very well be there next weekend for March Madness.
That's true. I'm going to be very
that
close
might be the host,
even this
That
week.
Might be the host city that ISU's back at, and then if somebody at Iowa City is listening, they're going to recognize your voice, and they're going to get mad at you.
They're going to dox
you. No credentials for Braden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're going to not let me file credentials, and it's just not going to go well.
Sneak him into the game.
You can't be talking bad about Iowa City when we're supposed to be sending you there next week.
Yeah, no, the WZ&D request line is just going to have my IP address in there very soon, so.
But, you know, going back to the to these teams, as Braden said, brackets even before the big bracket with the conference tournaments. But then we get into the actual bracketology of the real March Madness bracket. Now, have you guys ever picked your brackets not based on the basketball? Like, have you ever picked them in like a fun way? Like, you know, like mascots or teams or like what are some of the ways you've done silly ones like that in the past?
Well, sometimes for me, like if I don't know like the school or the team, like I would honestly, like when I was like younger, I would boot up NCAA 14. Whether I had the cooler mascot, I would be like, all right, that's the team.
I thought you said you were going to sim the game on NCAA.
No. That would be cool too.
I'm of a firm belief that brackets should not have the school name but the mascot name, because I would very much be taking the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, something, just cool names.
Yeah.
When it comes time to, oh, this is a team that made those big upsets, they always have those really, really cool names. And I think that if I was able to know that off the top of my head, like I do some of these other big schools, I'd be able to kind of pick these a little bit better. But aside from that, you know, the Abilene Christian University, they would win based on an alphabetical order bracket. That is not a great strategy, but it's certainly a strategy that exists. So
my mom has picked by mascots for as long as I can remember, and she has more titles in my family's pool than I do. I think I have like one and she has at least two or three, and because she picks my mascot. But she loves dogs, and year in and year out there's a team called the Bulldogs that's always in the Final Four in Gonzaga, and she doesn't really know what Gonzaga is. You know, I hope my mom's listening so she can hear this, but she knows that they're good and she picks them every year because they're Bulldogs. And so they always make it to the Final Four and she always ends up winning because she doesn't know anything about them, but she knows they're always a one seed. They're called the Bulldogs. And so that is sometimes a strategy I respect, because as you said during the break, Braden, I think you said something like the more you get into sports, the like harder it is to pick correct brackets, because it just defies logic. That's why they call it March Madness, because there's no logic you can put to it for how these games shake out. I mean, am I wrong with that?
Yeah, no, you look up the scores of like, oh, this team got beat twice in the regular season. Oh, well, they're not going to be able to beat them this time. And then they win anyway. Or, you know, you just get a random upset. You get a team that you've never heard of, or a team that you have not really paid much attention to. And you're like, oh, these guys are soft. These guys are not going to be able to, you know, beat this team, and they come up and just, I mean, there's so many close games. Like in the regular season, you play these games and not in a tournament setting, not in a neutral site, and these games are not close. But I think because of how much these tournaments mean to these people, you just get so much more nerves out of the higher seeds and more talented teams, and a whole lot more heart and, you know, just trying to do everything the right way, fundamental basketball out of these smaller teams. And that's what makes it all so much fun to watch every year.
It'll be fun to watch this tournament, but they're going to have a lot to do to make up – well, not make up, sorry, to live up to last year's tournament. I think last year's tournament was pretty solid.
Oh, it was
the championship
awesome.
Was great with the big Kansas comeback, and St. Peter's was awesome, and Oral Roberts had a nice run as well, as you said. And there was a lot of fun aspects of last year's tournament that I think will be hard to replicate, but I have a feeling they're going to be able to add some more magic this year, Liam.
I definitely think they could. I mean, we were joking about St. Peter's earlier because they're winning their quarterfinals and their whatever conference they're in, but I mean,
Doug Eater's not on the team anymore, right?
No more, yeah, he's on Bryant. I'm not sure. Okay. I don't think they're making the tournament either, but it would have been great to see Doug back in the tournament. I mean, I got the Barstool shirt when they made him last year. But actually, I think that I would love to see another team like St. Peter's or like another Loyola, as much as you don't like them.
I never liked them because of Redbird volleyball. I have no issue with them for basketball. I've rooted for them for basketball in the past. My hatred for Loyola is literally only volleyball, because they – over the last few years, where I used to cover the Redbird volleyball team for the Vedette and then ZND, they were ISU volleyball's main rival. And rivalry could be in a completely one-sided thing, which is what it was. Yeah. ISU always beat them.
Yeah. And speaking of Loyola, since we're back on the topic, Oklahoma, you know, you get your brand new coach. Obviously, you think maybe Loyola losing their coach and losing a lot of their players is a big problem that had them, you know, falling and really struggling in that new conference this year. Oklahoma, a first-round defeat to Oklahoma State, their big rival, certainly not a good start for this new tenure for him.
For Porter Moser?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching that one last night. He's got the full-on beard coming in now, and a former ISU guy himself. His story is interesting, how he struggled at ISU, went and was an assistant for a while, and then went to Loyola, and all of a sudden had a completely new outlook on coaching and found all that success. But year one, it's hard to judge a coach in his new program, but year two, I think, right now for him in Oklahoma. But we'll have to see what happens for him for the next couple of years and whether or not he ends up dropping back down into the valley. Who knows? Maybe a second stint with ISU at some point now that he's got some victories under his belt.
I wouldn't be against it. I know that.
Well, we'll see. We'll have to see about that one. But let's see right here in the last minute of the show. Let's give our way too early prediction for who's going to win March Madness this year. And by way too early, I mean by about a good month. Who do you guys have? I'll give you guys a second to think, so I'll go first. I'm going to go with Kansas again. That's who I'm going to pick in my bracket, I have a feeling. They don't have the same team as last year, but they have a good young core that is nothing to be messing with. I'm going to go with the University of Kansas in this year's bracket for my bracket. Braden and Liam doing all the research at their computers right now because I put them on the spot. They have to come up with a team. I'm not going to hold you guys to this. Don't worry.
So, I am going to go on a limb here, okay? I don't think Houston, even though they're going to be legit in their hometown for Final Four, I don't think UCLA even makes it through their tournament, hot take. And I don't know if Kansas can really repeat. But I just I really like Alabama. And they were also a team that's kind of underperformed a little bit, but I like them this year, and I kind of want to see them do well.
Liam?
I'm going to be really quick here. I think I'm just going to go out on the limb here. I like Purdue. I mean, I don't know if they're going to go far, but I think that Purdue can honestly make a run.
Purdue, one of the best teams in NCAA throughout the year, and Liam thinks they're going to finish the job and cut down the nets in Houston. I'm going to go with Kansas on that one, and we're going to call this an episode of The Red Zone. Thank you to Liam Lyons and Braden Fogerson for joining us. David Moses, feel better soon. We will not see you next week. We'll see you the week after that, but don't worry. You'll get lots of WZND this weekend and next week with March Madness, possible WNIT, and then, of course, the Missouri Valley Women's Basketball Tournament this weekend. Thank you for listening to The Red Zone. I'm Mikey Finelli. Have a great night.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.